different backgrounds. We don't know each other. We don't know what to expect in terms of the personal interaction. We start by expressing our views. And I think the very first stage, as I perceive it, is a stage of realizing the respect that we have for one another. As a result, accepting the views of one another with the respect that we have for one another. And consequently, if you pass that stage, it really becomes very easy, even if you have divergent views or views that needs to be somewhat altered or shaped, to achieve that, because there's no confrontation, there's no ego involved, there's no conflict of personality, there's just a spirit of cooperation between five persons who maybe by a quirk of fate really happen to have perceived, as I think you saw the question from the beginning, have viewed that there is a new overarching reality in our world, and that's, call it globalization. But that globalization doesn't only mean finances, economics, and communications. It also means globalization of values. And so justice and democracy and the rule of law are important components of that. And that also means that you recognize certain basic humanistic values. And so you look at the vulnerable segments of society and you say, you can't really have a world society which ignores those who are more vulnerable. And so from that point of view, it becomes very easy, really, to reach an agreement as to what to include and what not to exclude. And the rest was really a question of methods. But if I may divulge a secret, I think this is probably the only instance in the world where a Nobel Prize winner acted as the temporary secretary typist for our group. And so he turned out to be, I think, our most illustrious person, and I think that from now on, secretary's days should have that big symbol above, you know. Even Nobel Prize winners can be occasional secretaries.
Stuart.
Well, one thing we mentioned in the paper was adaptability. In fact, Douglas Adams suggested before we met that the entire report might consist of saying, connect the output back to the output. In other words, introduce some measure of adaptability, of adaptation into the functioning of the institutions.
Feedback.
And selection pressures exerted by failure or success, as in biological evolution, as in thinking, as in all these other complex adaptive systems. So we mentioned that briefly as a possibility. But the bureaucracies tend to become sclerotic instead and not very adaptable. And that's one of our very biggest challenges, is to try to make our institutions less sclerotic and more adaptable. If they become more adaptable, they will presumably begin to integrate their activities because it's obviously called for by the situation. Probably other people have a lot to say.
I think it depends on different sectors. For example, if you look at one largely unregulated sector, it is the transnational or multinational corporation. They are regulated at the national level, levels in different ways, but their reach, their impact, their scope affects many societies, and there are areas in which they're largely unregulated. For example, the area of corruption. Look in the pharmaceutical and chemical industries about experimentation in developing countries. Look at the movement of industries from highly regulated societies to societies which are developing and not being regulated. So that is one sector that needs regulation. We have today over 400 international organizations. We all know the United Nations, maybe the Council of Europe, the Organization of American States, the Organization of African Unity, and so on. But there are 400 such organizations. There's an international organization that regulates the price of coffee. What are all these organizations doing? They're at least harmonizing their policies and then eventually integrating them. In other words, how do we break down the compartmentalization? Now, this is something that has a much greater impact than we realize, because bureaucracies tend to become so controlling in society's lives as well as in the life of the international society. If we cannot bring these bureaucracies under some type of accountability, we may find that the priorities of the bureaucracies will determine what the outcomes of our world society is going to be. And maybe an observation which has a great deal of humanistic significance, but not others. In all of the conflicts that we have seen in history, especially the major ones, including the Holocaust, these terrible crimes of genocide and crimes against humanity would have not have occurred if not for the complicity of bureaucracies. And so here you've got these huge bureaucracies that have this capacity for good, but which, without accountability, turns out to have a greater capacity for evil. And this is something we need to address.
I'd like to add a point to this. I agree completely, naturally, with Sheriff, since we're involved in. I think there's also a tremendous need for greater awareness on the part of people to put pressure on bureaucracies and governments to change. One of my experience has been, I'm a reporter, I spent a long time covering the Vietnam War. At the very beginning, when we started to get involved, and Kennedy made his famous inaugural speech about we will support any friend or oppose any foe, which was kind of a formula for becoming a world policeman, everyone thought it was marvelous. I mean, they never questioned what was going on, and for years afterwards, nobody questioned what was going on. It's only when the whole thing began to look so disastrous that you began to get questions and dissent and protest and so forth. So we can't absolve ourselves of some of the terrible things or the failings of the bureaucracies and governments. I mean, it's a public vigilance that's terribly important too, and an awareness to keep. After all, you look at elected officials, look at it in this term. We elect them, we pay their salaries. They work for us. I mean, we're their bosses. We should be anyway, and we shouldn't allow them to get away with the kinds of things that they do. And I think that becomes incumbent upon us, the public, and not only in this country but also around the world, to lean on governments and lean on bureaucracies to make changes.
A question here from Bruce.
I just wanted to follow up.
It's a good question. We spent they kindly spent quite a lot of time listening to stuff about prehistory, primatology, paleoanthropology, because if you look at the long-term history of humans, their interrelations, and their relationship with the environment, you see some things that are quite different from what we expect. And it changes your attitude towards solutions to some of the issues that we are addressing. For example, one might sneer at the statement that rich nations need to contribute to solutions in poor nations, the idea that it's just this noblesse oblige. But looking back through work of people like Stanley and prehistorians and ethnohistorians, you see that there's a systematic historical relationship between the third world and the developed nations, and that was a colonial relationship, an exploitative one, in which resources were extracted at a high rate and labor was taken without pay over long periods of time, and that some of what we see in the third world relates to that history. So there's an obligation to redress and to take part in the solutions. In terms of human nature, in relation to some of the things that that Nikki contributed through her poetry and prose, is from anthropology the understanding that when there are not large centralized hierarchical institutions in human societies, and there's many societies still today that lack those, of course most of prehistory has evidence of societies that lacked those, we see that women and children have very different, and the aged, have very different role in society than they do today, so that most rulers today are men. Priests are generally men. But in many of these small societies, women are the center of society, and they may be the main authority in many cases. Men may be in others. But women are not disenfranchised, probably because most food is collected by women, and especially older women, completely the surprise to us who in our history have privileged men to be provisioners and who've cut women and others out of the economic system. But that's something that institutions have achieved. That isn't the sort of normal human condition. So knowing that, then we feel more confident to address institutional solutions, such as the ones that Sharif has worked on so much. So in a way, each of us had a different patch on things with a similar goal, and the special information that we each gave allowed us to integrate better between the goals and the solutions, and understanding the relationships of the problems to one another.
Jonathan?
Well, on a national scale, one has the same dilemma, what kinds of controls are legitimate and what kinds infringe on freedom of commercial activity, and we find compromises. And the same issue arises on the national scale as well, because, for example, in healthcare, when a very ambitious scheme was proposed in this country 7 years ago or so, there were many advertisements attacking it on the grounds that government bureaucrats